Thanks, everybody. Welcome to UXER. Again, I'm Bob Braddock here at UXER. And this is, we're glad to have you here today to hear from Becky and Matt. Becky's a late addition to our agenda. I didn't think she was going to be able to make it, but she did, so that's great. So they're going to be here to talk all about the City County Addressing Committee. And if you've ever had questions about why streets are named the way they are, or why we have two of the same streets in one community, they might have an answer for you. They might not, though. We'll find out.
Yeah. I'll make something up.
What's that?
I'll make something up.
Yeah, they brought some nice props today, too. So, they also came with Catherine Reed, one of our best friends here at UXER, on the GIS side from Allegheny County. But she's going to be here for backup, right? Is that what you said?
That's right.
Yeah. So Becky is here as a GIS analyst. She's with the City of Pittsburgh's Department of City Planning. She's been there since 2006. She's on the addressing committee, and I think some of you in the room are also on there with her. She's a graduate of University of Pittsburgh at Johnstown with a BS in math and computer science, and got her MS in geography. You hear that, Michael Glass, another geography person in the room from IUP. She has 23 years of experience in the GIS field in private, public, and educational sectors. Native of Western Pennsylvania, lives in the city. And our other speaker, Matt Mercurio, is Allegheny County's GIS manager since 2007. It's nice to see you're still here, Matt.
I think I'm long looking.
He's a Penn State grad with his BS in geoscience and went to Ball State in Muncie, Indiana for his MS in geology. So he's been using GIS to explore scientific data and in his work there, and then parlayed that into a career in GIS. And we're glad to have him here in Allegheny County. He's got 15 years of experience in GIS, working in all sectors. I mentioned oil and gas, or not oil and gas, but geology. But Allegheny County is his first experience in local government GIS. He lives in Swissville, not a Pittsburgh native, but we'll give him an honorary title. Lives in Swissville with his wife, who's also a Penn State geoscience grad. There's another one in town. You don't feel so lonely.
No, I don't.
And he's training two future geologists. I guess those are your children, right?
Yes, that'll be them. Yeah. Will they like it or not?
So the street he lives on has it, like, everything related to addressing that you might ever want to know, and I think a lot of us live on those streets. So we'll open it up with the presentation. Would you prefer we hold kind of questions till the end? Or
definitely not. If you guys ask questions as you want them, I don't really know them. Okay. You guys seem like a pretty broad mix of professionals, so whether you're users or just interested in general, just kind of let us know when we're trying to get through in an hour.
Do you want to? Yeah. Yeah. How many here in the room have GIS experience? Have used the software in some degree? So pretty GIS savvy.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. I'll turn it over to you. Thanks. Thanks so much for being here.
Sure. Just like whoever. I don't know most. I know.
Few, yeah. We usually don't do that because we have a bigger, like, we've had up to 40, 50 people in the room. So. We can definitely do that. I'm not going to put you on the spot, Steve, because you've got a mouthful.
Thank you.
But we'll start with Caesar.
I'm Caesar Tikikis, and I'm an intern here at UXER.
I'm Ed Neusser. I'm the Land Use Policy Coordinator at PCRG.
I'm Michael Glass. I'm a lecturer in urban studies and geography by training.
I'm Catherine Reed, Allegheny County GIS.
Bill Thomas. I'm the GIS manager for the county's Department of Human Services.
Ray Dunham, State Deputy Director of Emergency Management and Homeland Security for the city. I just want to know who not to offend, so I don't know who's in the room.
Bob Reagan, Pitt.
Ricky Hawkinson, a student and a research assistant.
Tom Stoginski, Health Department.
Carson from Stillwater Cog. I'm an intern there. I graduated from Kaikamani.
I'm Andrew Gill. I'm from the Post Gazette.
You're not reporting?
I'm not reporting. I'm hanging out.
I'm Sarah Stroney from RADC.
Steve Novotny, Community Coordinator for PCRG.
And we'll start it off, everybody nod around the table. Around.
I'm Kevin Boyle. I'm an undergrad for Pitt's Urban Studies.
Yeah, I'm Shuni Kwame, also undergrad from at Pitt.
Lucas Nusewe, I'm with the Office of Child Development at Pitt.
Chris Bream here at Pitt.
Susan Adair, Mind Valley Initiative, Real Estate.
Thanks.
Great. Now I'll turn it over to you.
All right.
Thanks again.
I'll probably alternatively sit and stand. I'm kind of hyper. But basically what we're going to talk about is addresses. whether you guys are users, assigners, but you guys all, most people live in the county, or temporarily or permanently live in the county, so you guys are probably familiar with all these issues. And it's kind of been one of those problems I think has been kicked down the road for quite a bit, but with the advent of the CPAC and a couple of changes at the county, it's come to the forefront, and I'd say it's definitely an interesting data, one of the more interesting data challenges that I've ever had to deal with as a JS manager, just as a data practitioner. So I said, as you guys have any questions, just let me know. I'd like to, the presentation kind of builds from, you know, the background of the county in general, get you guys some information about, you know, if you're not from Pennsylvania, kind of why things are the way they are, then kind of build into why CPAC or the City of Pittsburgh Addressing Committee is so important to, I think, the future of dealing with addresses in Allegheny County. And then kind of wrap up with my favorite part, just basically speculation, hand-waving about where I would like to take addressing at the county as a resource for anyone that does research or just does any kind of work within the county borders. This is my quick overview, just to give you guys an idea we're going to talk about. We're talking about Allegheny County GIS so you guys know where we sit in the county structure and kind of where we are by what we do. I'll talk about how we relate to addressing, and you guys will see it's an interesting relationship based on the way that the Commonwealth Code is written. Then we're going to talk about CPAC, the City of Pittsburgh Addressing Committee, and how that, I think, was kind of a sea change in the way that folks in Allegheny County handle and think about addresses. Then, of course, the future is my hand-waving and just talking about things where I see the technology going inside the county, maybe as work with other municipal partners to deal with just, you know, how do we combine all the various sources of information to get you guys the accurate data you need to do your work and research. So these are just the stats. Who here is from the region originally? So maybe about half. So from what I understand, Pennsylvania is the only common law commonwealth in the nation, meaning that a lot of the local powers is kicked down to the local level.
Virginia and Massachusetts.
Yes. They're different kinds of commonwealths. Yeah, they are.
I always thought there was only one.
It's weird. It's an English common law commonwealth. It's very odd. I dealt with it anyway. So as I understand, I am not a poli-sci major, so I could be wrong on that. But our focus is Pennsylvania, obviously. What that means to someone that collects and deals with data is that we have a constrained area bound by law about where we're supposed to take care of things, the county borders. Then inside those county borders, the county has very specific rights on what it can and can't do. I won't go into that whole spiel, but what we can't do is address. And the things we deal with when we do addressing are these various different types of municipal subunits within the county border. And that is a lot of variety. I don't care what you're talking about. You're talking about dogs, you're talking about, you know, types of rocks. That's a lot of different kinds of things to deal with, especially when it comes down to how do you just call something an address and then communicate to everybody else that wants to actually get to that location. We have, 130 municipalities, including the City of Pittsburgh, 45 school districts, 100 zip codes. So from an addressing perspective, we're talking about, 600 different combinations of what city you live, what municipality you live in versus what postal code you get mail at. That's a crazy number. 500 borders, just within the county. So whenever you cross a border with a street, some of our 3,500 streets that cross those borders, you're going to deal with changes of jurisdiction and authority. And, you know, anyone who's dealt with addresses kind of understands that. But this is not going to be a shaming talk. This is going to be a here's how it is, how do we move forward. We all know the issues, and there's ways to do it with technology and process. So I just want to set the stage. GIS has been in the county and the city for a long time. I think that the City of Pittsburgh was one of the first, if not the first, local municipality to actually engage in GIS activity when it was an expensive, hard road to sow. And throughout those years, even though it was very rough in the years, it was actually disbanded at the county level for a while. And it was survived mostly because of people at the health department that wanted to keep this alive. So this is, one of the longer histories I've seen in local GIS. And what I'm interested in is Y2K Plus. So Y2K really saw the advent of people freaking out about computer systems being able to handle just the future. And then somehow, Catherine can explain to you in more detail, GIS got bundled into the mix as an essential technology to move forward to the county, Y2K Plus. And there's politics that happened there. There's a whole presentation about the history. This is one short slide, giving you an idea that we basically, digital data in the county has been around for a long time, and we still have not dealt with addressing until I decided to deal with it, or was forced to deal with it. So this was what happened. You know, it got defunded because people did not think that having electronic record keeping for coordinates was something worth doing. It's depressing, but that was 96. Now we're many years later, and it is very robust. Say it again.
Sorry. No.
What was the question? Okay. So basically, this is a lot of buzzwords that you put on the website. People know what you do. We make, distribute, and consolidate data at the county. We try to work with anyone we can. It is essential that we work with any stakeholder we possibly can, internal county organizations, municipalities, because as you'll see later on, the county is a consolidator. We are really not a data creator. We're more of a custodian or data consolidator. I call us the blimp, right? You know, we basically sit above all the municipalities and we look down. Well, if you have one guy looking down, you're going to miss the stuff behind you. You have six people looking down, it's going to get a little bit better, but we have six people looking down and we're not going to see everything all the time. So part of my non-altruistic part of this talk is to encourage you folks to talk to people where you live and say, hey, it's not a trivial matter. I'll try to get some, you know, you guys are probably the future leaders of your communities because we have so many of them. It's not a very particularly, you know, techie kind of a thing to deal with, but it's really essential as we move forward, and hopefully we'll show you that in this talk. We are consolidators. As with most data creation, lies within the municipality because they have the right to control what's in their borders. And that's various levels of degree. They will cede things to the county or to the state. But for the most part, the stuff that we care about in GIS to do basic work, boundary data, addressing parcels, that's all municipal information. If the county takes care of it, it's pretty much because we do it for operational efficiency, meaning that when someone calls the county and wants to know who is their representative, what is the DPW district you're in, the county should be able to know that. We can either go look it up in a file cabinet or we can do it with a computer. Well, we do it with a computer, obviously. It's 2012. One way that we've really dealt with some of this, kind of making them blimp a little bit easier to deal with, is we try to work with COGS and engineering firms. That, for lack of a other consolidated entity to deal with multiple similar municipalities, we've had really good success with COGS and with engineering firms. So, and we've been lucky to have people like the folks at Penn State at PASDA, the state-funded data sharing site. Our data is always up there. We will, you know, we always try to make our data better and more accessible. The data is the, and then we also deal with data exchange agreements if you need something that is not available via the PASDA website. There's going to be data that is going to be one-off data that's not going to be available, you know, CAD records, full parcel information. It's just stuff that the counties decided to keep a close eye on, and then we sign data exchange agreement. Once we sign that agreement, the free flow of information is pretty much there. I think people here have done those agreements, so they're easy to deal with. Catherine takes care of it all, and all we really want in exchange is tell us if our data is wrong. We will fix it and give it back to whoever, so the next person can have good data. It is the county's data. It is your guys' data. We want to keep it and maintain it because you can't maintain it everywhere. Let's make it better as best we can. And for addresses, that's particularly helpful. So, addresses. As a geologist, rocks don't have addresses. But in Allegheny County, everything has got an address. And very strange addresses sometimes, very logical addresses other times. There's reasons for that, and after doing some research and dealing, I think, learning a lot through working with CPAC, this is kind of the way it is and why. The county, unless ceded that right by the municipality, has no right to do addressing inside the county. It is not in the code for us to do it. Other counties, like Lawrence County, has convinced all the municipalities to sign intermunicipal agreements so they can do the addressing for them under the guise of countywide dispatch. I think it's an excellent idea. Allegheny County, it may or may not ever happen, but that there is a legal precedent to do it. We just don't do it here. And it will have to be dealt with at each different kind of municipality that we have. As we talked about before, there are a large variety of kinds of municipalities within Allegheny County's borders, so what to deal with that particular issue when we come to it. But the good news is we're next to the courthouse and we have lots of lawyers to deal with. So since I'm a GIS guy, things probably happen before GIS, I just don't pay attention to them. There's probably a bunch of tables, maybe file cabinets, you know. at some point, someone said, we want to be able to do this with a computer. In the early years of the county GIS, I'm calling the nascent GIS, the focus on GIS was planimetric updates, basically drawing straight lines from aerial photography without a whole lot of focus on the data behind it. That was kind of the technician's job. The most common way to deal with geocoding was with a data set like GDT or TomTom, a commercially available data set that had the geocoding attributes with it. So you were relying upon a national, even a worldwide vendor for your geocoding information. It was, you know, it was good enough for what the data could provide at the time, but people would run into issues. I'm assuming a lot of issues in Allegheny County because most of the normal standardization rules for maintaining a large data set just don't apply in Allegheny County or Pennsylvania for that matter. And then as we see in CPAC, you'll see kind of why some of that is. The good news is as GIS as the technology has matured and the county GIS has matured, we're able to use the technology at hand, proliferation of commercial data sources like Google and Bing, better tool sets where people actually realize, hey, I could probably sell a tool set to do addressing because everyone wants to do it. And just taking the level and saying, you know what, why do we be stuck in lines? We can go to points and actually have any number of points so that we can get right to the thing we're talking about as opposed to trying to, you know, who here has done geocoding before? It's probably one of the most painful things to do. I really don't enjoy doing it. You don't get the results you want. And usually you say yes, and the deadline comes up, and you still have those key 10% you have to get, and you just can't find them anywhere. So modern database technology allows you to store that data right alongside of the address. So address is now a way to refer to a location, but it is not the only way. And I think at this point, moving forward, will be the secondary way of looking for a location. That's just, you know, I'll pontificate more later at the end, but that's, you know, kind of where we're headed with this. And then multiple business systems need to deal with an address. Sometimes the address is used to find something. Sometimes it's just there to be the unique value for that particular thing you're talking about. So there is now a new expectation, I think, because of the way the industry is moving, that you will always know where someone's calling from or someone wants to talk about something. You are now expected to understand when they give you a lat long or an address or a coordinate. It is an expectation as opposed to a nicety anymore. So, you know, for people in a geographically bounded organization like the county, you can determine a responsibility for the issue that they're having, and you can begin to assign service to that location because you know where it is, and you basically take a whole bunch of, I got to call this person or call this person out of the loop. And that's always at the, any organization wants to become more efficient, that's one way to do it. And at the very minimum, you know, government information systems are, I mean, I've seen a huge, even just in the 5 years I've been at the county, the amount of self-managed data systems are just proliferating at a really increasing rate. If you don't have at least one way of referring to the thing you're talking about across business systems, and then I think in Allegheny County or in any county systems, addresses is that local key. If you can't talk about it in the same way, you're never going to be able to find the permits that are in the health department system that don't have a building permit in the CAMAS, in the mass appraisal system. So trying to match them strictly based on textual or just address matching against databases about geography becomes problematic. You know, now that we have the capacity, storage is cheap, databases are now compliant, just store the coordinates directly in located records and have address be the secondary function as opposed to the primary. Some business systems that are GIS are not GIS aware, never will be. You know, if we could do that, that'd be great, but we need to minimize, at least minimally, use geocoding or addresses to say, here is the standardized address, whether you're mailing or delivering other kinds of services. So, you know, I say pluses and minuses. This is just my opinion. As a data guy, having all these municipalities is great in one aspect. I don't have to make a grid for data updates. It already is made for me. I can go muni by muni, update the data, and I have nice little definable chunks, work areas I can already go at. Another nice thing is, you know, also as a geologist, people that know the area know it best. So having a small, you know, township or a high degree of a fragmentation in the municipalities allows for people to really know the area really well. So if you find that person or group of people that know that data really well, your data becomes much better very quickly. So you don't have to go and cultivate this set of expertise that's already there. And with public safety, it's particularly true. And Ray can have some anecdotes about that as we talk about more. Talk about CPAC. And then so, and now there is the the expectation that your local government is keeping their data electronically, whether it's for record keep, whether it's for a business system for efficiency, whether it's for transparency. You know, some of these smaller municipalities cannot handle the technology being forced on them. And that becomes an issue with addressing as well, because I want to say, hey, don't just do addresses, now tell me where the address is, and that's probably to me like, oh, it's blowing my mind, I can't do that for you. But at some point, you have to deal with it, and that's towards the end of the slideshow, too. I'll talk about that. And also, for us, I think we're a CPAC, really is a beacon for other municipalities, is that changes of administration can lead to inconsistent address assignment. Now, I know as a practitioner, to me, it makes a big deal. To everybody else, it seems like it's not that big of a deal. But if you think about 130 different things, they're always changing administration. And it can take a long time, it can take a short period of time. In that time, people are not stopping to build stuff or tear down stuff or make new parcels. Just call fall through the cracks sometimes. So we need to be able to have rules in place. So when administrations change, we can have consistent address assignment. So, and this is where, you know, having a model ordinance like the City of Pittsburgh's ordinance for addressing really helps everybody involved, from constituents up to managers. It outlines clear instructions for both addresses, requesters, and assigners. Okay, who do I talk to? What if I'm not getting it? Okay, so you know the job function that you're going towards. You know, it provides longevity to, you know, an addressing methodology across changes. Like, just, you know, please make sure when you assign an address, just follow some basic rules. Like, don't put one right next to two. Just, it is not going against any standards. It might be easiest to do for you now, but if you look at the other needs of addressing, and I think the lowest common denominator in my mind is delivering emergency services, you need to be wary of standards that are already out there. And people have done it. We're not reinventing the wheel. All you have to do is follow the rules that are already there. And we'll talk about the standards that we follow at the CPAC. That will come later on. There are multiple standards, but I think that, you know, the standards we're going to talk about are the most prevalent standards, because it meets all needs of business systems. And then, you know, I don't know the nice way to say this. Sometimes you should be talking to a job function or a committee about things like this, not talking to a person. Because that person may not assign an address in a way that is beneficial to the rest of the organization. And, you know, a committee is ideal, but even saying that this is the, you know, the acting public safety person's job is a step forward. And some municipal laws they are just varying how they define that. You know, allow for greater transparency and record keeping, because, you know, if it's a committee or a job function, they can be start to keep those records and post them in a place where citizens can see them. And this is where all these things that I've talked about up to now, I think, has really been embodied in what the work the CPAC is doing. So that being said, I'm going to turn it over to Becky Reinhold, and she'll tell you more about the City of Pittsburgh addressing.
Thank you, Matt.
Do you guys have any questions before we move on? Or a lot of information in a short period of time?
I'm saving you.
Okay. All right.
Okay. I'm a member, as Bob had said, I'm a member of the addressing committee. I'm also, too, Ray Dimache here is the head of the addressing committee, so.
Chair.
I'm sorry.
I don't have any more responsibility.
Thank you. So basically, we're going to go over is what the background is before the addressing committee happened. We're going to talk a little bit about the ordinance, just give you a little bit of history about the ordinance, the standards, some of the standards that are involved with the ordinance, and then additionally, any ongoing activities that we have. So in 1999, this is kind of the start of the addressing issues. There was an upgrade that was going to be done to the computer system in the dispatch center. Beforehand, they used to use a tabular-based system. Now they're switching over to a GIS system. As a result, this is going to cause some issues with addresses and street names as well, too. When they switched over, they started to have these issues. When they had the tabular system before, they were able to have a range for addresses, but say if there was an address that was kind of out of that range, they could just put it into the tabular system and not worry about it. GIS now is becoming geocoding, and that can cause problems. So a group decided to get together to try and to develop some type of standard that they would adhere to for the addresses. And their primary concern was the safety, how to get those firemen, the police, the EMS, to a particular address as fast as possible. So they were working on this, and of course, political issues became involved, and that kind of busted up the group. But addressing still stayed right below the surface. It eventually was going to come back up again. Example of this is Station Square. This is a photo of Station Square in 1984. You notice the buildings there. There's address 1, another building has address 4, and the hotel there is address 7. Well, between 1 and 7, we have this huge parking lot. This only allows for 2 addresses, 3 and 5. They weren't expecting to build anything new, but you know, as technology goes, they decided to add Bessemer Court. So now we've got a bunch of buildings there that's not going to fit. They're going to have no addresses because there's only 1 and 7. So in 2002, the group got together. They started to work on addresses for this for Station Square, develop a new thing, and this is now what you see. In July of 2002, they put the new addressing numbers into the 911 system, but a lot of people are still used to the old addresses, so they had the new and the old addresses, and then that was in June, and then in July of 2002, they officially went to the new addresses. There's other issues that came to the forefront as well. One was Children's Hospital over in Penn Avenue. They wanted to have an address of 1 Children's Hospital Way, which is fine for their driveway, but the only problem is you really shouldn't address just 1 building on a driveway. You need to have at least 3 buildings in order to make it addressable and to name the thing. So there was back and forth between that. Ray ended up talking to a council member, and that was what happened to cause the ordinance to come into play in 2008.
Just a little bit more of a background on this, and it kind of ties into
the
politics of it. My boss, Mike Cuss, called me up because he knew where I used to work at City 911 Center and asked about this. And it's always been an issue with me over the years because of the work I had to do. And I kind of said, not only no, but hell no. They're not doing that. That's stupid for a whole plethora of reasons. So the UPMC folks decided, well, we'll go to the city council member and we'll go to him. And they got Pat Dowd, who calls me up and says, hey, explain this to me. And I explained it to him, and giving him credit, he says, that's really stupid. We've got some really big problems here. What's your answer? I says, pass a law that says we do addressing the way you're supposed to for public safety, and that's it. And anybody else that wants to change the street name the same as their spouse or this person or that person, or they like 1 Mellon Bank Center for an address, tell them to go take a hike. Because addressing is for 1 reason. You get a police car, a fire truck, and an ambulance to a location as quick as possible. Anything else is secondary, and if it works for those groups, then it should work for everybody else. He introduced a bill, and
that was introduced in September of 2008. Council was back and forth with the bill. They had some issues with it. They were concerned that we, as a committee that was going to be formed, were going to go out and actively look for wrong addresses and go and fix them. There were some people that were concerned, especially about the senior citizens that may have lived in this house for years and years and years. They're used to this 1 address, and then we're going to come in and say, oh, no, you have a new address now, you know, and they get a little confused. That really was a sticking point for this. But the ordinance finally did get passed and was signed by the mayor at the end of October of 2008. 2 of the main things that the ordinance provided was a procedure for requesting new addresses as well as naming of streets. And this is a form that kind of was already in play before this ordinance came about, but we did some modifications to it. And then also establishing an addressing committee. Now, as Matt mentioned earlier, We have the committee, so it's basically not just one person that's making the decision. That one person could possibly be influenced politically as to maybe making the wrong decision for a particular address.
What's BBI?
BBI is Bureau of Building Inspections.
Thank you.
And
occupancy permits, building permits, safe buildings, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And DPW is Department of Public Works. So as you can see here, Ray, of course, is the chair of the committee. But we have people from DPW. We have people from BBI. There are several city planners, including myself, and another planner as well, too. We've also included Allegheny County Emergency Services because they're the ones that do the dispatch. You know, they have knowledge of what's going out there. So it's helpful to have them there as well, too.
Just one jump in. It's kind of important in one respect. The ordinance sets a minimum number of people and agencies that shall be on the committee. So within the ordinance, it says Allegheny County Emergency Services. And then anybody else that the group wishes to include, we have the flexibility to do that at our discretion as a group to give you, you know, to make the ordinance livable over time, because something may crop up that we didn't think about in 2008, now it's 2018, say, yeah, these people really have, need to be at the table. It doesn't preclude them from being there. We can just say, yes, we want them there.
Is the post office an active member, or is this sort of
unfortunately, of late, they're going through, they used to be there all the time, almost 2 years, and then they've gone through some downsizing issues with personnel. And we haven't had anybody for, maybe a year and a half?
Yeah, it's been a while. We want to get them back
on
the
table. Still on the distribution
list.
Yeah. They still get all our notices and stuff, but they don't have the bodies to be there anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, and the reason why we've included the post office in this is because, we're dealing with mailing as well, too. Mm-hmm. The post office used to be hand-sort your mail. So as Ray's favorite story is that a letter out in California, maybe addressed to the mayor here in Pittsburgh, and that's all they have. They don't have, the Grant Street address. But it gets shipped over to the Pittsburgh area. The Pittsburgh office looks at it, and they say, mayor, and they know where to send it off to. Nowadays, they are all automated, computerized automation. So they don't have that human aspect to it anymore. So now they're starting to realize that, they need to be concerned about addresses too. Also, in the past, a post office, if a municipality doesn't have any addressing ordinance or somebody that does addressing for them, the post office would do it for them. So they have a little bit of knowledge in the addressing.
They shouldn't do it. So then that's where we fit in the ecosystem, is that the U.S. Post Office is a listener. So they are not allowed to assign addresses, anywhere in the country.
Hmm.
And they need to be address listeners. So it all starts at some government authority that is not the federal government that tells you what the addresses are going to be.
And we had a few bumps in the road when we initially started, even back in 99, before we had an ordinance that says we could do it. We kind of banged into that, because they stepped into a vacuum. There was nobody doing it, so they
Correct.
Took it on, and there was a little bit of a institutional resistance to the whole thing. But over the course of time, reason prevailed, because you have this kind of issue, too, with who wants to be in charge of an emergency, just to give you a quick story. And what I always say is, okay, fine, you want to be in charge, give me your name, your address, and a phone number, so I can give that to the lawyers so they can sue you when you screw it up. So, because what goes with authority is responsibility. So, when you kind of structure it that way, you want an address? Fine. If you screw it up, you're the one that's going to be responsible for it. And then they usually kind of,
So with the ordinance, we have standards that we follow by. The big one is NENA, the National Emergency Number Association. It's standards that we use from there. It's kind of like our template. We don't necessarily follow it completely because Pittsburgh is a unique area, and there's some situations where we need to make a little bit leeway here and there as to how we handle things. But we're basically trying to provide a uniform addressing system for the area. When we're talking about streets, we're talking about any road that can be traversed from any type of emergency service vehicle, and it has to have three addressable structures on it. And that's where handle, and that means whether it's public or private, whether it's a road or right of way, whatever, we address them. And that, here's actually the book here, is what we call the Bible for addressing. If we have any questions of all about a situation that may come up in addressing that we're leaning back and forth as to which way to go, we go to this book and we look it up to see if there's an example of it in here that can help us to better determine what the proper address should be.
What's the origin of that book?
This is the NINA addressing
it's
book.
It's like a professional organization of 911 people. And also, a big part of it, they started to write this up for the computer system, just as Beck mentioned earlier, all started coming out of computer systems. And manufacturers, because they're going to try to build CAD systems, computer-aided dispatch systems, they needed the standard to work with. So the emergency 911 folks kind of got together. Who wrote the base, what was the base of that document, were the addressing procedures that the U.S. Postal Service initially wrote and have evolved with over the time. So that's another tie-in with the post office. Probably 80% of this base document came right out of the United States Postal Service's addressing protocols. And then they adjust them to address emergency response issues. And pretty much at the end of the day, even the U.S. Postal Service defers to this document as their standard, so to speak.
So two things we consider with addressing, it's the street naming as well as the address number. For the street naming, we're looking at the route name of the street plus any type of thoroughfare type. That's the minimum, is where you have the route name and it would be the road type. That's the minimum that you can have for a street name. Now here's some examples of some street names that are really probably not very good to use. You have Country Time Lane, but it can be spelled two different ways, as one word versus two ways. So that can get a little confusing. Rogers Street, we have several of those in the city, but as you notice here that there are two different types of spelling. So when somebody calls in and they say that they're on Rogers Street, well, is it the one without the D or the one, with the D? Again, that's a confusing thing for 911. Also, when somebody's talking on the phone, here you have Browns Hill Road versus Brownsville Road. They're excited when they're on the phone. They need to get somebody there. They'll say it really fast, and it's hard for the dispatcher to determine what they're actually saying.
That happens probably monthly. Someone will go to one or the other, and it turned out to be the other. Because unfortunately, for the address ranges match up for those streets.
Yeah. Another type here that it can cause a little bit of problem is when you have an old country lane versus country lane. The person may accidentally forget to say old, but they do mean old. That can cause some confusion there too. Another thing for the route name, as you can see, they have JFK Drive. You really should not use any type of initialing, whether it be any type of punctuation, apostrophes, dashes, etc. In the route name, you should spell out the route name as there. The proper one is John F. Kennedy Drive. Another confusion can be North Shore Drive, and that actually happened to me when I first came here. Is north the directional, or is it actually part of the route name? There's confusion with that. You really shouldn't use any type of directional or compass in the route name. If you do happen to have it in the route name, you should spell it out. And then finally, the boulevard. Okay, is the road the and the road type boulevard?
I used to work Medic 2, which covers that area. And we got a call for 137 the boulevard. And I said, okay, what's the street name? It's the boulevard. I said, I understand it's a boulevard. What's the street name? I didn't know. I'm not from that area. That's my coverage area as a paramedic. But I, who the hell would name a street the boulevard? But there it sits.
Somebody here.
Yeah. It runs off of Brownsville Road. Not Browns Hill Road.
And you showed our half street, through all those half streets.
Oh, yeah. 43rd and a half street.
Half street,
yeah. So, I pass that every other day.
And here, too, with the boulevard, you really should not have any road type in your route name. So that's another reason why this is a bad one.
Actually, the official name of that is Allies Boulevard. Really, I mean, if you sit down, it's Allies. It's, you know, it's a thoroughfare type is Boulevard, and the name is Allies, and it just kind of got Boulevard of the Allies.
When we looked at also looking here, we were looking at the road on thoroughfare types too. And when we were naming new streets, we started to have a little bit of confusion of what type we wanted to use. So back in 2011, we decided to put together a sheet that would show the definition of the road type and the list of road types that we would use through the city. Now, there's much more that the post office have, and that's from publication 28. We took from that as well as from another city in California, and we kind of condensed down to like, okay, these are the types that we're going to use for any of the newer streets. Now, there might be other types that are still out in the city, the older ones, and that's okay, but this way enables us to say, okay, this road, it's kind of a big road, it's got an island in the middle of it, that's more of a boulevard. Or this street's kind of winding, meandering throughout. Yeah, that's kind of more of a lane. So we developed this system that we could look at.
So I'll tell you a story where that became an issue. Under the Maslow administration, they did a whole new street signing system, and they went back to the original records. And that's how they made the street blades. And there used to be a street called Thomas Boulevard, which is over there in Point Breeze, North Point Breeze. And when the new sign went up, it said not Thomas Boulevard, it said Thomas Street, because that's what it officially was in the, well, there was an absolute uproar because the city downgraded the importance of the street that those people lived on, and they downgraded it from a boulevard, which is apparently more significant than, quote, the street. So one of the things we kind of like did is try to put that together to kind of bulletproof what we were doing so that we had some guidance when we were making these decisions so that A, we were consistent across the board, and B, we'd say, hey, you know, it's on a piece of paper here, we're not making this stuff up.
Okay, we can back it up. Now, if you noticed here, there's duplicate route names. And of course, as you know, every rule has an exception. This is an exception that we have developed. Oak Hill Drive is the main thoroughfare for this area. But we have this little street that was a new street that was coming off of Oak Hill. They kind of wanted to use Oak Hill again, so we're like, okay, we'll use Court. Because it's such a short segment, and it's off of Oak Hill Drive, we're going to get, at least the emergency people are going to get to that area. You know, and also, too, for the addressing, we decided to go with single digits and double digits versus the Oak Hill Drive, which had 3 and 4 digits. So that way, there was a little bit more of a distinction between the two roads.
What we wanted to avoid is that Oak Hill Drive is in the west end and Oak Hill Court is in the east end. So that if someone got confused and they went to the wrong place, they're not on opposite ends of town. They're like close. Mm-hmm. So if we make them kind of connect, even if they get confused about court versus street, at least they're in the neighborhood.
Right. Other types of special street names that we have are honorary street naming as well as commemorative naming. These are two different types of honorary. We're looking at a street that's going to get renamed for maybe a person that's either deceased or somebody that is living but has done some significant thing in the western part of Pennsylvania. This is going to become a permanent name where the commemorative name, bring up the blade. The commemorative name is something that might be an event that might happen. It's only going to be temporary.
Examples.
Yeah. This is an example of one of the mock-ups that we have done. And this is actually one that's out there now. As you notice, for the commemorative blade, it's a different color. It's supposed to be below the permanent name. It's not going to replace the permanent name. This is only going to be up for about 6 months, and then it should come back down. There always is the possibility, though, that once you put the commemorative up, the person that has asked and requested it, and again, they have to have a written proposal in order to request it, And they may say, hey, can we go ahead and make that an honorary name? So there is a possibility of switching over to that. But again, they have to go back through. They have to get approval not only from the committee, but also the property members or the property owners that are along that street that say, hey, you know, 50%, yeah, okay, go ahead and change it. There's more to it than that. I have some paperwork here if anybody's interested in it.
You know, someone will say, well, okay, you bureaucrats, you're just kind of making stuff up just to make our lives miserable. What the hell is the problem? Well, where it came to my attention back in my 911 days is call taker gets a call. I'm at Christopher Columbus Way at Christopher Columbus Way. They decided over in Bloomfield, they took Liberty Avenue and Cedarville Street. They put two sign blades up for commemorating Christopher Columbus, and I'm Italian, so I'm allowed to be critical of this. So there's an accident, and someone dialed, and they look up, and that's what they said to the dispatcher. And we couldn't get to, we couldn't figure out where the hell they were at. And from the 911 side of the house, we really don't need to know what's wrong, but we need to know where the hell you're at. Mm-hmm. If we don't know where you're at, you're SOL, as they say. Because, you know, fires are a little bit easier because you can kind of see the flames and smoke. But medical and police things, you've got to, you know, if we don't know what's wrong, we'll send the police to your house because they got the gun. So, but as long as we have the address, we can get somebody there. But that we don't do this stuff just to make people's lives miserable. And some people think that we do. And there's really a good reason for that. And that's the one that drove the point home with me, was that cutesy puts Christopher Columbus Way. If I had my druthers, there would be no street names or numbers. Everything would be XY coordinates. And even that changes a little bit because of continental drift. But other than that, you know.
So you're saying if the ambulance doesn't show, send up
smoke signals? Well, you know, like I said, you know, you just have to get close with fire because usually it's a self-correcting problem.
Yeah, and as Ray pointed out, actually, too, I've worked with the city's street center lines, and that's what got me into addressing on the addressing committee. And I was using Google because I was checking the street names, and I came across this intersection that he talked about and had two blades, same colors, and I thought it was Christopher Columbus Way. So I went and changed in our center line file to Christopher Columbus Way instead of Cedarville, and then only to find out later, oh, that was an honorary name, and I didn't know it. So I had to quick change it back again. So you can see where there's confusion if people are not familiar with the area. You know, they don't know what the actual street name is. The other part of it is the address numbers themselves. And things that we deal with are the ranges. Now here is an example of what we shouldn't be doing. You notice that one side of the street has the 400, 500 blocks. The other side has 3,400s. Now, probably what had happened with this was at one time that the 3,400 side of the street was not within the city, but the city annexed it. And so as a result, now we're getting some weird ranges. You really shouldn't have this type of range going on because when an emergency vehicle is going down the street, if they're looking down the one side and they say, oh, okay, I'm in the 400 block, I'm looking for 407, so wait, here's 406, 407 should be across the street, and it's not. So it causes some confusion. The other thing you need to look at when you're doing addressing is the flow and the parity of the addresses. Here's another example of improper addressing. As you can see, one side of the street has increasing numbers, but they're also mixed. You should have typically have all your odd numbers on the left hand.
Is that Washington's Landing?
I was trying not to say where I was.
There's somebody from URA. That's URA did that. They just go and they, that was their development. They know nothing about addressing. They put. And are those numbers are built into the house?
Yeah.
They actually put blocks in the numbers. So when we go and change those, they're going to have to take a chisel. A chisel part of their house off.
That's awesome. The left-hand side should really have the odd. The right should have the even. You can reverse that and have the right on the, the even on the left and the odd on the right. But as long as they're separated. And also, too, they should both be going in increasing orders. Not increasing one side, decreasing the other.
Well, you're right. I mean, that works good for a postal carrier.
And when we do addressing, we try to stick to a standard of 11 feet. Every 11 feet gets an address, a new address. It doesn't necessarily always can happen in the city because you kind of have to look around the city to see what's going on. You have to look at parallel streets to say, okay, you know, I'm going to make sure that I'm in, you know, both sides are 100s. I want to stay in the 100s. But maybe the 11-foot criteria might work because of the buildings that are there. You might have to go adjust to 17 or to 22. But when we're doing a new street, we like to keep with the 11-foot criteria because that's what they suggest here in the Bible. And finally, you have some special cases. And this is multi-structures. And what we're talking about here is there could be different types. There could be like a campus setting, which is here in Pitt, and we actually worked with them over the summer, that they have multiple buildings within the campus where mail goes to each of these buildings. But there were some buildings that weren't addressed, so we went and had to go and help them out with that. But within the building, you may have different floors or different suites and stuff. So the building gets one address, and then anything inside the building may get a unit number, whether it be a suite number or a floor number with additional numbers. But you can have exceptions to the rules, which is the example of row houses. It's one building, but there are individual units within that, and that people live, different people live within these units so that they have their own unique addresses. Another example is downtown when you see the storefronts. Again, it's one building, but each business wants to have their mail delivered to that particular unit. Another type of multi-complex is where you have a centralized building, such as a hotel that may have cottages. That hotel gets the address, but then the cottages around it will get the unit numbers as well, too. So those are the different type of addressing things that we have to deal with. Our ongoing activities, you can have great addressing, but it's only as good as what the signage is that's out there. So we started to run across some stuff like this, and it's happened when we were trying to develop this honorary blade, too. We ran across incorrect designs. As you can see here, it's wooden designs, and it's not reflective, so it's going to be hard to see at night. Here's another sign where it's incorrect mounting. It really should be on a pole similar to this. Honorary name. Okay, here's an example. The blades, both the same color. The honorary name is above the real name, and where it should be below. And also, too, since we have the Kaufman Way, they're honoring that as Kaufman Store. But the only problem is there's a Kaufman Way in the Shady Side, which has one N. So when people are sitting at that intersection, there's an accident. Yeah, they may say Kaufman Way, and they're like,
yeah. Is that Macy's?
Yeah, it's Macy's now. And then also, too, we have a tendency to put our neighborhoods in there and the ranges as well, too. This is an incorrect blade because you can, as you notice, it says Casino Drive for the neighborhood. And it really should be North Shore.
Just in case you weren't sure that you were at the casino.
Right.
They had to.
and that was an effort that they came to us and they wanted, what they want, they wanted 777 North Shore Drive, which there was no way we could do that way North Shore Drive where it was and where it ran. So what we thought at the committee was, well, okay, let's look in the book. Is there a casino road anywhere? Well, there was no casino, so we were able to, and we were off maybe by 30 or 40 feet or so back.
Yeah, there was a couple of numbers we were off.
We were able to give them 777 Casino Drive, and technically it should have been 600 something or other, but it was close. Yeah, I got a call like that one time. A lady wanted her house number changed because it was 666 something or other, and I said, change religion.
They exist, right?
Yeah, they do. Yes, they do.
So we were able to give them 777 Casino Drive. So we're not totally heartless.
No.
We just see it that way.
Yeah.
It's going craps.
The one bad thing about addressing with the city is, unfortunately, once people do request for a new address, you know, we have to look. We have to see what's going on in that area. And it seems like 9 chances out of 10, it never fails. You know, we want to help this person out, but then we start to find other problems in that area, too, that now that we have these problems, we got to fix these as well, too.
And then some we just can't.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if we're doing something on South 19th Street, we need to rename every street in Southside because, Medic, I was sent to South 19th Street, and guess where the call was at? 19th Street in the Strip District. So they're out there. There used to be an old insurance commercial saying people driving the cars in the way with holding their dog and talking to their dog and they pan back and they're behind the wheel of the car. They're out there. And these are all over the place. And that's just Beck said, as soon as we make something that's really simple, it turns into an absolute mess.
And one of the other two things, we're going to try and develop different types of blades as well, too. One of the things we've had to do is we've actually had address steps, and there are steps out there that have addresses that actually have street blades on it as well, too. So we're trying to come up with some type of blade to show that it actually is a step.
Can you take a picture of Bob's face?
And Bob knows this story because I've told him to it before. Because when I first started in the EMS back in 1975, they gave us a gas station map and said, here, have at it. And so we'd get a call and we'd look up in the gas station map. And those gas station maps, the center lines are just what's in there, and they don't differentiate between streets and steps. So we'd be screaming down the road, and all of a sudden it's a T intersection. And according to my map, the road keeps going, but it dead ends and it's a set of steps. And you have to screech to a stop, and now, okay, now I have to go back this way, go that way, go. And if there were a set of steps that ran from Carson Street to Grandview Avenue, then that map would have had that was connected, and I could have drove up the side of the hill, and, well, obviously I can't. So, and then there's buildings on streets that there's no way to get to. There's a street up there. There's a street. And then there's two steps going up. That's on Pine Street or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's still place in this. Everything's address, right? I mean, I know some folks in the room probably know this history. I hope it's not bad oral history. Like, some communities didn't want the addressing. They didn't want to be found, right? So, but then
yeah,
they
well,
gave in. Right?
All the rich people live up there, and nobody wants to know what Mary Lemieux's house number is. So the county 911 folks had to deal with this. And they just said, hey, call us at the police desk. We'll tell you where it's at. And we said, hey, it doesn't work.
They gave it, right? I mean,
I'm not sure how. How did you guys work that out, Matt?
Magic Matt.
You heard of Magic Mike? This is Magic Matt.
So we are well up against our time limit. You guys probably have questions. This is what I'm going to talk about later, but please ask the questions before you have to leave to Ray and Becky if you guys have City of Pittsburgh addressing questions, because I know that we're bumping up right against our time limit. This is pure just me being able to, you know, have fun with the pain that was addressing for me. So
this is so unusual since our meetings are so quick.
I'm just surprised. And it's on Friday, too. It's kind of freaking me out.
It's a regular day.
Postponed it.
Yeah, we get excited when we get out of our meeting and it's like 11:15, and we've started at 9:30.
So, what kind of questions do you guys have? What do you have any questions,
Matt?
Comments, concerns?
Yeah, from a regional planning perspective, is there any protocol in place when you're dealing with the contiguous counties touching?
Absolutely not. Now there should be. There is a thing called Region 13, which is a homeland security region set up by the state. That has to deal with at some point mutual aid across county borders into different to different for different events.
But Trapper and McDonald, I mean, you have municipalities
across. Oh no, yeah, we have municipalities across borders. But yeah, that's a whole different ball of wax. But yeah, for the most part, like it just happened with the FEMA floodplains. There is no statewide source for municipal boundary data that actually is correct. PennDOT has one. We have our own. FEMA has their own. They went to compile the FEMA data for our new floodplain data. Where'd you get your data? Got it from the state. Well, the state's data is incorrect because they just don't, they don't update their data based on the information that kind. Every municipality is described as a parcel. That is what the that's how the common law works. Commonwealth works. So have you guys ever looked at your parcels for your houses that you own or parcels that your parents or someone you know owns? They could be totally referential in the fact they don't have to have any staking or anything out at all. So it's a very, I call it, it's a 130-piece puzzle where all the pieces are constantly changing shape. So to do it with the counties is even more problematic because there is no incentive at this point. And the state, I think, encourages the independent nature of Pennsylvanians, I like to say.
And really, I mean, I sometimes am accused of having a skewed viewpoint on addressing from a public safety perspective. But every time I've been challenged on that, I think I've prevailed in the argument. And probably one of the best examples as far as what Max is talking about is as far as ground truthing data. 911 call data gets ground truthed every day. Mm-hmm. Okay, because so if someone can't find it, there's a feedback mechanism that says, I can't find it. Place, where the hell is it? So if we do the documentation on the 911 side of the house and then it gets passed to the Beckys and the Matts of the world, we can get that stuff fixed and we can ground truth the data. So if you're going to look at one place where you're probably going to have the best point of service entry or a point of service data collection for making addressing right, it's going to be on the 911 side of the house, above and beyond anything. Because those are the ones that absolutely have to have it, and when it doesn't work, people scream about it. And sometimes they scream about it to our good friends in the media. When someone goes to the wrong overlook street and the heart attack's on another street.
So, and then that became compiled. So just quickly, little bit of history that I glossed over was up until 2010, the city and county CAD system shared equipment but did not share data. So with the new, most recent CAD upgrade in 2010, it is a true countywide dispatch system, and they share a common data set for address. Lookup,
which produces its own problem.
Right, because before,
how many main streets we have now?
That's a unique thing. That so when you have each municipality not looking beyond their borders, they can name a street anywhere they want to name it, and that's one thing that I think the CPAC does extremely well is that they, not because they have to, but because they want to check to make sure that street is not anywhere else in the county. As it shouldn't be. Whenever you have a dispatch jurisdiction, there should be basic rules like no duplication of range, no duplication of street mains, even what they call sound dexing, Roger and Roger. You don't want to have that across
Somerset,
the county.
Somerset.
If you're starting a brand new state, that's a really easy rule to follow. If you're starting if you're trying to reconnoiter data that's been around for hundreds of years, you know, it's just a data problem. But you know, the technology I think is I can talk about these things. Whoever wants to stick around past the hour limit. That these four things are the way that we're dealing with those issues. And in Pennsylvania, it's a godsend. I mean, we could not do it without it. And I think that's why it took so long to have the various forces come together and say, you know what, we can tackle this issue. It's right, but now we don't know, can we tackle it? I mean, we have no choice but to tackle it.
Well, and then people on a daily basis make it more difficult. Yeah. And here's one that's happening right now. And I'm working with Patrick Dowd again and try to talk to his colleagues on the county council. Because they want to name a bridge, David McCullough Bridge, just like Rachel Carson, just like Roberto Clemente. So, Roberto Clemente, I'm on the Roberto Clemente Bridge. Well, next thing we know, we're sending the Roberto Clemente Drive over here in Oakland. Well, Rachel Carson Bridge. Well, we say just make a mistake and we send him to Carson Street, or we send him to Rachel Street. So now we have a David McCullough, and we have a David Street, and we have a McCullough Street. So we have folks that want to be cutesy-nicey, you know, this, that, or whatever, and they do the stuff that they think is not going to be a problem, yet it is a problem. And, you know, just I'll say this, is, and this is what I'm trying to convey this to the legislators on the county side. At the end of the day, when this goes bad, even though it's in the city, you know who's going to own the problem? Allegheny County, because they run the dispatch center. So they're taking their own head and stick it in the vise and said, please turn it hard. And we have to get that, but we run into this all the time. People don't understand how important addressing is, and when you do these kind of warm and fuzzy stuff, you're rolling the dice.
One question I have, Matt, is we've got time for a few questions.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm here until you go. This is my Friday. So
one question I have is, how do you get, if everything is so bottom up, how do you get the municipalities that you work with to adopt the addressing that you use if they might be using something that's completely different that they've been using for 80 years? And you make a change or something along those lines?
It has to come from the top down. It has to be an edict either from the county or from COG to do it. The county can suggest legal ways to do it. It is not our right to take over. It's only our right to be ceded to. So, yeah, it's very hard.
I said it ties into it.
So what we've done is we work. So because most municipalities cannot have their own town engineer, we work with engineering firms. So we get the data via proxy. Through COGS, through people feet on the street, through dispatchers, through responders. So while we might not ask them for the data directly, we find out about it later. Now, what I want to do, this is where I basically say I don't speak for the county. This is, you know, super nerd Matt trying to tell you how I want things to be done. And let me see your question. There should be a model legislation that can be adopted by a municipality that wants to cede the control of addressing to the county. Will that happen? That is a purely political thing to happen. Can it happen? If the city of Pittsburgh can do it, and no one else has an excuse, in my opinion, because that is probably the one most difficult thing.
We had some forward-looking and thinking folks, whether it be my boss or Councilman Dow and other folks that we eventually convinced me to do this. A little jaundiced perspective on this particular item, but it's based on history. It's kind of like, you know, everything is fun and games till somebody gets hurt. Well, nobody really does anything until somebody dies. It is what it is. When someone dies because of this, someone will get off their dead ass and get it fixed. Until, unfortunately, that happens, hopefully people could prevail on other people to do the right thing. But it's just like, you know, my tires kind of probably need new tires. Well, chances are you don't change the tire until you get a flat.
So, what was your question real quick? I don't
want to... If a borough doesn't want to cede addressing control, the county, you say the county can't, his hands are tied, but the county controls the 911 operations. You don't get 911 calls.
I love people
then.
Like you because that's what my slides go into. Absolutely. Right. There are ways technology can handle this problem without anyone losing their rights at all. I call it the benevolent county model. Let me wash your dog. We're doing the crap that no one else wants to do. We'll just help you do it.
I was thinking more of a threat.
No. Yeah. You can ask anybody in here. Threats don't work.
I disagree. Because back in 1999...
threats work after a decade.
Yeah.
I threaten you now and deal with it later.
1999, when we had the Station Square problem, myself and Mike Homa, who's Becky's boss, went over there and we're talking to the folks. And we said, this is what we have to do. We got a readdress, and we one address per 11 feet, and we laid it all out and said, we even have the map that shows this is what these are going to be. And we had one person that says, no, it's been one, blah, 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 and we're not changing it, and I don't care what you're going to tell me, and got real all uppity about it. And I said, fine, don't call 911. Have your own police agency, have your own fire agency, have your own EMS agency, because when you call 911, no one's coming because your address is wrong. So you can do what you want. You can call whatever number you want, but don't call us. Ain't coming.
And at the county, I am the system that we're designing at the county has the ability to say, I don't care who you are. If you are deemed the addressing knowledge person, whether you're a county person because you see the control or you are the borough manager, we want you to give us your data. You don't have to come out and get it from you. We'll come get it. But, yes, we have to work with them. There is no choice. The idea of 130 things agreeing is so slim. Whether they're municipalities or just, you know, kids in a class, it's just not going to happen. So we had to make all contingencies. And as a technology guy, that's where I get interested. As a data guy, I mean, you have people that already are familiar with doing it. People submit their data all the time to Google Map Maker, to Waze. They do it. The question is, who is the best at doing it for county business? And that's going to be the county. But I do not ignore the outside world. There is Google, there's Bing, there's OpenStreetMap. We use it all, and I want to give it back to them, too, because guess what? Guess who gets a phone call when they can't find Bakery Square? It's not Google. It's the county people or the city people. And we have every interest in getting people there. You know, it'd be great. You know. So these are my next slides. If you guys want to see it, sit around and listen to them, I can show you this stuff. Particularly, I think you guys would be interested in the enhanced geocoding that I would like to kind of roll out at the county. particularly people that work in the university arenas. And then, you know, then my other ones are, this is absolutely pure hand wave. And this is where I get to speculate wildly about where the county should go, and where we have the guidance and technology to go there if we have the leadership.
So is that a request to see if anybody wants to spend more
minutes? Oh, yeah. You guys have questions or leave, whatever you want to do. It's up to you guys.
Like, can you do it in about 5? I know some folks have to run.
Absolutely.
I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I'll fire right through it.
Okay.
So basically, enhanced geocoding. You guys do geocoding. Geocoding is a black box. They don't tell you how geocoding happens. You get the results you want, the geocoder is good. Get the results you don't want, geocoder is bad. Maybe your data is bad, a little bit of both. So if you're dealing with addresses inside of the county, like I think most people here deal with at a majority, when the county has an authoritative address management system used for county business, the idea is we would turn that geocoding service out to anyone that has research needs as a first-pass geocoder. Most geocoders want you to submit the address and then the city, or the what I like to call the postal city. In Allegheny County, we have, I think, the luxury of having municipalities. So if you have, like the help, Bill Thomas was here from Health Department, from the DHS, Human Services, if you have constituent address plus their municipality, your geocoder works better and faster. You're not going to get Google or Bing to do that for you, but make them be your second-pass geocoder. And if you find addresses in that second-pass geocoder that we don't have, just tell us and we'll fix it so that you have a free first-pass geocoder that's going to get about 85-90% of your issues if they're valid addresses. If not, they're going to be maybe data quality issues. And then you will almost automatically be below the monthly threshold where they're going to start making you charge for stuff. So to me, it's a nice thing. If I have more people using my data, tell me what's poor, the data will get a lot better. Would I like everyone to go and click the map? But they're not going to do that. I love making maps. I won't use Google Mapmaker because when I get home, I don't want to use a Google Mapmaker. I want to do something different. So this is what my big thing. Geocoding is a black box. And if we do put it out of the county, it's going to be well documented and hopefully, quality enough for you guys to use this in the future. So this is, to me, is a sea change in the way people manage addresses inside of organizations. I think people like Google and Bing in the military have been doing it for a long time. The idea is if you have a centralized, authoritative source of information, run by organizations that have 80-90% of the interaction with the populace, everybody else can use that data with confidence. Part of that confidence being that when you report an error, it gets updated. I mean, we're all app people. If you report an error, you want to see the error fixed. And if we can make that mechanism through technology and through things like spatially locating, using your eyes to see doesn't make sense, then we can begin to make that authoritative database get closer, faster. And this is where at the kind what I'm heavily involved in is making this a reality, hopefully, in the near future, so we can have that authoritative data set for internal county efficiency, but then also for other county partners that need to deal with address data. And this is, anyone that's on GIS, it's the sphere diagram, right? You have a bunch of different layers. You have the arrow going through them all, where geography is the key across most things. It is a beautiful thing to learn in college, to actually go into the county and see all these disparate data systems out there that have absolutely no foreign keys across the systems. Geography quickly becomes that key because in theory, if it's outside the county, you should not be dealing with it. It is your purview is the county, when you're a county official, I should say. So, that is where I see some of the, once you get a good address database and you can store the coordinates directly inside the databases, you can begin to make those keys across all their database systems. And then this is probably the realization of that goal. So this can get a little long-winded, so like I said, if you guys want to stop me, you can. 911. It is probably the besides the mail, which is a non-real-time delivery service, whereas emergency services need to be real-time. You rely on some basic set of information to know, do I have everything inside my data set that I should have? Landlines, telephones that terminate your house, used to be that data set for 911. If you have a landline, you have, what's the thing? It's federal regulations that you're going to get 911 service. right?
Yeah. Federal and state.
And they're going to be up to up at 5.9, at 5.9s, you know, 99.999% of the time. That's what a landline is supposed to do. If they don't, they get in trouble. Well, that's a great database to use up until the advent of voice over IP, a magic jack, you name it, cell phones, mm-hmm. right? So while the landline database is very good.
In case they're confused.
Yeah,
but tell them what PSAP means.
I'm going there next. Okay. Yeah. So these are just a bunch of containers for me to like wave my hands around, right? So the idea is that inside the dispatch center, or the PSAP is a public safety answering point. Basically, it's going to be our county dispatch center. You want all the information you can get about the caller the fastest you can get it. Knowing where they are is the first piece of information, one of the first pieces of information you need to know to respond to the event. To facilitate that, the 911 system will maintain their own record, their own confidential listing of all the customers in the county, what their name is, what their telephone number is, and what their address is adhered to these NINA standards. So when the call taker gets that information, they know immediately that if you're calling from your landline, you have a caller ID, here's where you live, dispatch service is quickly going to that location because you know where that thing is. And you can assign things like whose EMS district are you in, whose police zone are you in, whose fire zone are you in. So it helps you dispatch to that actual call. Well, now we have devices that are not landlines. And while GIS used to be a subset of the street database and the address database, it is quickly taking over because there's places down in, you know, in some of the more developed, some of the newer developments, they don't even install landlines. You get a fiber drop at the end of your community. You can get a cell phone. You get whatever you want to get. The point is, you still need emergency service. The only place you're going to get that is from somehow someone telling you that happens. In a lot of other, I say most other states, there's centralization at the county level for something. Whether you're talking about recording, whether you're talking about building permits, some level there's someone's got a comprehensive database of addresses. Those do not exist at the county because of the way we're structured in the legal system. So what we rely on is local GIS data. Now, while locals may not maintain that data in the future, I sound like a futurist. when the most complex version of next generation 911 is hoisted upon the country as a real thing, because you want to be able to get your emergency service no matter what device you're coming from, the GIS data, meaning the service zone boundary data, the actual addressing data, it's all going to get loaded into the telecom switches so that you have the most quick and precise routing of the dispatch, of the actual phone call itself, the data along with the phone call, and getting to the place where you want to be. That is where, if you cannot maintain your data up to the standards where they need to be maintained at a local level, you're going to begin to cause harm. And that's, while it's down the road in the future, having locally accurate data for real operational use is really a sea change for the way most people do GIS work, you know, in general. Unless you come from the military background or from a 911 response background, you know, five foot's good for most GISs. Five foot's great. I mean, I'll take 10 feet, if not a half a mile, for most things that I do. But for this, that is not an option. And this is really where the rubber's going to hit meet the road extremely quickly. And for 130 different things in Allegheny County, it's going to be really a harsh reality when they have to find out that. When I ask you a question.
See, two future things that are here already. Somebody said something about Marcellus Shale. Somebody doing something here on Marcellus Shale?
I covered.
Oh, you covered. Problem we have right now with Marcellus, not so much here in Allegheny, but some of the other more rural locations where there's Marcellus Shale sites, you know how they communicate? Satellite phone. Because their area isn't even cellular coverage there. So we've had 911 centers have emergency incidents at Marcellus Shale sites, and they're getting sat phones that comes out of alleys out of Texas, because that's where the routing for the satellite phone is from. And the next one, and I'm not sure you're aware of this, hope you are, Matt. You know, next gen 911 is supposed to address social media and texting.
Correct, right? Yeah. And even and so you have all, so the idea is that, you know, it's gonna be more heavy on sending the dispatcher all the information you can with the location attached to it. Well, it's great if I know where you are, but now I need to know how to get you what you need. So anyway, I really appreciate your guys' time, and then we went long. on this presentation. I know it was not the most exciting topic ever, so I appreciate you guys sticking around on a Friday.
That's great. Thank you so much.
No problem.
And yeah, that's great. We'll have the audio of the presentation online on Oxford's website, and also the copy of the slides as well. I hope to see you again on December 7th for our next roundup.